Lauren nodded. 2 summers at the Hidden Lake Ranch. Lauren fought the urge to squirm. She was sure that this beautiful woman saw every flaw that Lauren tried to hide. The hair that needed a trim, the shoes that leaked in the rain, the backpack worn thin. I don't suppose you're Italian.
No,
at least not that I know of. Does that matter?
It shouldn't.
Angie looked back at a closed door. But we've always done things a certain way.
And you're not it, Lauren thought.
I understand. You saving up for college? Lauren started to say yes, but when she saw the understanding in Angie's dark eyes, she found herself saying, I need a dress for the homecoming dance. The minute she said it, she blushed. She couldn't believe she'd revealed something so intimate to a stranger. Angie studied her for a moment longer, neither smiling nor frowning.
I'll tell you what, she finally said. You sit down at this table, have something to eat, and then we'll talk.
I'm not hungry, she said, just as her stomach grumbled.
Angie smiled gently. Lauren felt wounded by that smile somehow. Eat dinner. Then we'll talk.
Angie found Mira standing outside the back door, sipping cappuccino, with both hands curled around the porcelain mug. Steam mingled with her breath and formed a mist in front of her face.
Winter's going to come early this year, she said as Angie sidled up beside her.
I used to hide out here as soon as it was time to do dishes, Angie said, smiling at the memory. She could almost hear Papa's booming voice come through the brick walls.
Like I didn't know that. Mira laughed.
Angie moved a little closer, until they were shoulder to shoulder, both of them leaning against the rough wall that contained so much of their lives. They stared out at the empty parking lot. Beyond it, the street was a silvery ribbon in the darkening night. Far away, seen in slivers between the houses and trees, was the blue-gray ocean.
Remember that list Livy helped me come up with?
The Desaria destruction list, as Mama called it? How could I forget?
I think I'm going to make the first change.
Which one?
I found a new waitress, a high school girl. I think she could work some nights and weekends.
Mira turned to her.
Mama's going to let you hire a high school girl?
Angie winced. A problem, huh?
Mama will have a cow, you know that. Tell me the girl is Italian at least.
Don't think so. Mira grinned.
This is going to be fun.
Angie elbowed her. Knock it off. Be serious.
Is it a good idea to hire a new waitress?
Yes. Rosa is too slow to handle any more business.
I guess if you're going to make some changes around here, this is a good place to start.
How did you find her?
Employment office?
Angie bit her lip and looked down at the gravel beneath her.
Angie!
This time Mira wasn't smiling. There was concern in her voice.
I saw her at Help Your Neighbor when I went to volunteer. She was there, asking for a winter coat for her mother. That's how I got the idea for the coat drive.
So you bought her a coat?
Was she so transparent?
You said I should help people.
Yeah, I bought her a coat.
And offered her a job.
Angie sighed. She heard the mistrust in her sister's voice, and she understood. Everyone thought Angie was so easily victimized. It was because of Sarah Decker. When they'd been set to adopt her baby, Angie and Conlon had opened their hearts and home to the troubled teenager.
It's not like that, Angie said softly. I'm not investing. I'm just offering a helping hand.
You have so much love to give, Mira said finally. It must hurt to hold it in all the time.
Angie closed her eyes. The words had tiny barbs that sank into her skin.
Is that what it's all about? Shit, I thought I was just hiring a kid to serve food on weekends.
Maybe I'm wrong, overreacting.
And maybe I don't make the best choices.
Don't go there, Ange, Mira said softly.
I'm sorry I brought it up. I worry too much. That's the problem with family. But you're right to hire a new waitress. Mama will simply have to understand. Angie almost laughed.
Yeah, she's so good at that.
Mira paused, then said, Just be careful, okay? Angie knew it was good advice.
Okay.
Angie stood in the shadows, watching the girl eat her dinner. She ate slowly, as if savoring every bite. There was something almost old-fashioned about her, a round softness that brought to mind the girls of another, more carefree generation. Her long, copper-colored hair was a tangle of curls that fell down her back. Its color was vibrant against her pale cheeks. She had a nose that turned up just a little at the tip and was dotted with freckles. But it was her eyes, unexpectedly brown and filled with an adult's knowledge, that caught Angie's attention and held it.
You won't want me, those eyes said.
You have so much love to give. It must hurt to hold it in all the time. Mira's words came back to Angie. It had never occurred to her that she was stepping onto the merry-go-round of her old choices. Loss was like that, she knew. She never knew when or where it would strike. The littlest thing could set her off. A baby carriage, a doll, a bit of sad music, the happy birthday song. A desperate teenage girl. But this wasn't about that. It wasn't. She was almost certain. The girl, Lauren, looked up, glanced around, then looked at her wristwatch. She pushed the empty plate away and crossed her arms, waiting. It was now or never. Either Mama was going to let Angie make changes around here, or she wasn't. Time to find out the answer. Angie went to the kitchen, where she found Mama washing up the last of the night's dishes. 4 pans of fresh lasagna lined the counter.
The bolognese is almost ready, Mama said without turning around. We'll have plenty for tomorrow night.
And the rest of the month, Angie muttered.
Mama turned around.
What does that mean?
Angie chose her words carefully. They were like missiles. Each one could start a war.
We had 7 customers tonight, Mama.
That's good for a Friday.
Not good enough.
Mama wrenched the faucet's handle hard.
It will get better when the holidays come.
Angie tried another tack.
I'm a mess at waitressing.
Yes,
you'll get better.
I was still better than Rosa. I watched her the other night, Mama. I've never seen anyone move so slowly.
She's been here a long time, Angela. Show some respect.
We need to make some changes. That's why I'm here, isn't it?
You will not fire Rosa.
Mama tossed down her dish rag. It hit the counter like a gauntlet.
I would never do that.
Mama relaxed a tiny bit.
Good.
Come with me, Angie said, reaching out for Mama's hand.
Together, they walked out of the kitchen. In the shadow behind the archway, Angie paused. You see that girl?
She ordered the lasagna, Mama said. Looks like she loved it.
I'm going to hire her to work nights and weekends.
She's too young.
I'm hiring her, and she's not too young. Livy and Mira were waitressing at a much earlier age.
Mama shifted and frowned, studying the girl.
She doesn't look Italian.
She isn't. Mama drew in a sharp breath and pulled Angie back in the shadows along the wall.
Now look here. Do you want me to help you in the restaurant?
Yes, but
then let me help. Rosa will feel slighted.
Honestly, Mama, I think she'll be glad. Last night she bumped into the walls 2 times. She's tired. She'll welcome the help.
High school girls never work out. Ask your papa.
We can't ask Papa. This is for you and me to decide.
Mama seemed to deflate at the reminder about Papa. The wrinkles in her cheeks deepened. She bit down on her lower lip and peered around the corner again.
Her hair is a mess.
It's raining out. I think she's been looking for work. The way you did, remember? In Chicago, when you and Papa were first married?
The memory seemed to soften Mama. Her shoes have holes in them, and her blouse is too small. Poor thing. Still, she frowned. The last redhead who worked here stole a whole night's receipts. She's not going to steal from us. Mama pulled away from the wall and began pacing the room, weaving in and out of the empty tables. She was talking, whispering the whole time. Finally, she spun toward the window and argued with the air, gesturing wildly. If Angie closed her eyes, she might have seen her father there, standing firm, smiling gently at his wife's theatrics, even as he disagreed with her. Mama spun around. He always thought you were the smart one. Fine! Hire this girl, but don't let her use the register. Angie almost laughed at that. It was so absurd. Okay. Okay. Mama turned on her heel and walked out of the restaurant. Angie glanced out the window. Mama was walking down the street, arguing with a man who wasn't there. Thanks, Papa, Angie said, smiling as she walked through the now empty restaurant. Lauren looked up at her. That was delicious, she said, sounding nervous. She folded her napkin carefully and set it on the table. My mother can really cook. Angie sat down across from the girl. Are you a responsible employee? Completely. We can always count on you to show up on time? Lauren nodded. Her dark eyes were earnest. Always. Angie smiled. This was the best she'd felt in months. Okay, then. You can start tomorrow night. Say 5 to 10. Is that okay? It's great! Angie reached across the table and shook Lauren's warm hand. Welcome to the family. Thanks. Lauren got quickly to her feet. I better go home now. Angie would have sworn she saw tears in the girl's brown eyes, but before she could comment on it, Lauren was gone. It wasn't until later, when Angie was closing out the register, that it dawned on her. Lauren had bolted at the word, family. When Angie got home, the cottage was quiet and dark, and in all those shadows lay loneliness. She closed the door behind her and stood there, listening to the sound of her own breathing. It was a sound she'd grown used to, and yet here in this house that had been loud in her youth, it wounded her. When she couldn't stand it anymore, she tossed her purse on the entry table and went to the old RCA stereo in the living room. She pushed a cassette into the tape player and turned the system on. She increased the volume. Tony Bennett's voice floated through the speakers, filling the room with music and memories. This was her papa's favorite tape, the one he'd made himself. Every song began late, sometimes as much as a whole stanza. Whenever he'd heard one he loved, he jumped up from his chair and run for the stereo, yelling, "I love this one!" If only he were here. "I hired a new waitress tonight, Papa. She's a high school girl." She wanted to smile, laugh even, but that lightness wasn't in her. In fact, it felt far away. You can imagine Mama's reaction to that. Oh, and she has red hair. She went to the window and stared outside. Moonlight dusted the waves and glistened along the dark blue sea. The next song came on, Bette Midler's Wind Beneath My Wings. It had played at his funeral. The music swirled around her, threatened to pull her under. "It is easy to talk to him, isn't it? Especially here." Angie spun around at the sound of her mother's voice. Mama stood behind the sofa, staring at her, obviously trying to smile. She was dressed in a ratty old flannel nightgown, one Papa had given her years ago. She crossed the room and snapped off the stereo. "What are you doing here, Mama?" Mama sat down on the sofa and patted the cushion beside her. "I knew you would have a hard night." Angie sat down beside her, close enough to lean against her mother's steady side. "How did you know?"
Mama put an arm around her.
The girl, she said at last. Angie couldn't believe she hadn't figured it out.
Of course.
I'll need to keep my distance from her, won't I?
You've never been good at that.
No.
Mama tightened her hold.
Just be careful. Your heart is soft.
It feels as if it's in pieces sometimes.
Mama made a sound, a little sigh. We keep breathing in times like that. There's nothing else.
Angie nodded.
I know.
After that, they got out a deck of cards and played gin rummy long into the night. By the time they fell asleep, side by side on the sofa, curled up beneath a quilt Mama had made years ago, Angie had found her strength again.
Chapter 9. Lauren showed up for work 15 minutes early. She wore her best pair of black jeans and a white cotton blouse which she'd gotten Mrs. Mock to iron for her. She knocked on the door and waited for an answer. When none came, she cautiously opened the door and peered inside. The restaurant was dark. Tables sat in shadows.
Hello?
She closed the door behind her. A woman came around the corner, moving fast, her hands coiled in the stained white apron that covered her clothing. She saw Lauren and stopped. Lauren felt like a bug trapped in a child's hand. That was how this woman stared at her, narrow-eyed and frowning. Old-fashioned eyeglasses made her eyes appear huge.
You are the new girl?
She nodded, feeling a slow blush creep up her cheeks.
I'm Lauren Ribido.
She stepped forward, held her hand out. They shook hands. The woman's grip was stronger than Lauren had expected.
I am Maria Desaria. Is this your first job?
No, I've been working for years. When I was little, fifth and sixth grade, I picked strawberries and raspberries at the Magruder farm. I've been working at Rite Aid since it opened last summer.
Berries? I thought that was mostly migrant workers.
It is, mostly. The pay was okay for a kid. Maria tilted her head to one side, frowning as she studied Lauren.
Are you a troubled girl? Runaway? Drugs? That sort of thing?
No. I have a 3.9 grade point at Fircrest Academy. I've never been in any kind of trouble.
Fircrest? Huh. Are you Catholic?
Yes, Lauren answered with a nervous frown. It was a dangerous thing to admit these days. So much trouble in the church. She forced herself to stand perfectly straight, no fidgeting.
Well, that's good, even if you do have red hair.
Lauren had no idea what to say to that, so she remained silent.
Angie tells me you've waitressed before, Maria said at last.
Yes.
So when I tell you to set up the tables and wipe down the menus, you know what I mean.
Yes, ma'am.
The silverware is in that chest, Maria said. Not that it's real silver, she added quickly.
Okay. They stared at each other. Lauren felt like that bug again.
Well, get started, Maria said.
Lauren ran for the chest and pulled open the top drawer. Silverware rattled at the ferocity of the movement. She winced, knowing that already she'd done something wrong. She glanced worriedly back at Maria, who stood there, frowning, watching Lauren fumble through the drawer. It was not going to be easy to please that woman, Lauren thought. Not easy at all. By the end of her shift, Lauren knew two things. She needed to wear tennis shoes to work, and earning enough money for back rent and a decent dress wasn't going to happen at Desaria's. Still, she liked the place. The food was wonderful, and she never went to bed hungry. She worked as hard as she could, trying to find jobs that needed to be done before someone, namely Maria, told her what to do. Now she was refilling all the olive oil decanters.
You know, Angie said, coming up behind her, this could be a great restaurant if people actually showed up.
Here.
She handed Lauren a dessert plate that held a piece of tiramisu. Join me. They sat down at the table by the fireplace. The flames flickered and snapped. Lauren felt Angie's gaze on her, and she looked up. In the dark eyes, she saw something. Compassion, maybe? With an edge of pity. It made her feel uncomfortable. She was used to that look, of course, but somehow it was worse now. Angie had seen Lauren that night in the parking lot, and then again at the Help Your Neighbor house. There were no secrets now. It was really nice of you to give me this job. You don't need another waitress, though. She wished immediately that she'd kept silent. She needed this job. We will. I've got big plans for the place. Angie smiled. Although I don't know much about the business, just ask my sister, Livy. Lauren couldn't imagine that this beautiful woman failed at anything. I'm sure you'll do it. The food is amazing. Yeah, my mom and Mira can really cook. Angie took another bite, then asked, So, how long have you lived in West End? Maybe I went to school with your folks. I don't think so. Lauren hoped she didn't sound bitter, but it was hard to tell. We moved here when I was in fourth grade. She paused. It's just Mom and me. She liked the way that sounded, as if they were a team, she and her mother. Still, her family, or lack thereof, was not something she wanted to talk about. How about you? Have you always lived in West End? I grew up here, but I moved away for college and got married. Angie's voice seemed to give out. She stared down at her dessert, stabbed it with her fork. I just moved back home after a divorce. She looked up, made an attempt at smiling. Sorry, I'm not used to saying it yet. Oh. Lauren had no idea what to say to that. She went back to eating. The sound of their forks on porcelain seemed loud. Finally, Angie said, Do you need a ride home tonight? No. She was surprised by the question. My boyfriend is picking me up. As she said it, she heard a car honk outside. She shot to her feet. There he is. I better go. She looked down at the dishes. Or should I? Run along. I'll see you tomorrow night. Lauren looked down at her. Are you sure? I'm sure. See you then. Bye, Lauren said, already moving. At the hostess desk, she bent down for her backpack. Slinging it over her shoulder, she headed for the door. The crowd went wild. Like everyone else, Lauren was on her feet, screaming and clapping. A roar moved through the stands. The scoreboard flickered, changed, revealed the new numbers. Fircrest 21, Longview Christian 14. That was awesome, Anna Lyon said, grabbing Lauren's sleeve and tugging it hard. Lauren couldn't contain herself. She started laughing. David's pass had been beautiful, a perfect 40-yard spiral right into Jared's hands. She hoped his father had seen it. Come on, someone said. It's almost halftime. Lauren followed the group of girls down the aisle and onto the concrete stairs. They hurried down to the sidelines, where the various booths were being set up. She took her place at the hot dog stand, where the annual staff was already hard at work. My turn, she said to Marcy Morford, who was busy refilling the mustard jars. For the next half an hour, while the marching band moved across the field, she sold hot dogs and hamburgers to the sea of people who drifted along the sidelines, congregating now and then to talk. Parents, teachers, students, graduates. On Friday nights during football season, they all met at the stadium for local games. Everyone was talking about David. He was playing the game of his life. When Lauren's shift was over, she rejoined her friends and watched the end of the game. Fircrest kicked the other school's butt. The stands slowly emptied out. Lauren and her friends cleaned up the mess at the booth, then went to the locker room. Outside the door, they stood in a pod, talking and laughing and waiting. One by one, the players came out, hooked up with their girlfriends, and walked away.
At last, the double doors opened and a crowd of players rushed out, laughing and talking and punching each other in the arms. David was in their midst, and yet he stood apart somehow, the way Brad Pitt or George Clooney must have stood out in their high school. The floodlights fell on him alone, and right then he appeared golden, from his blonde hair to his bright smile. Lauren ran to him. He separated easily from the pack and pulled her into an embrace. "You were great," she whispered. He grinned. "I was, wasn't I? Did you see that bomb to Jared? Shit, I was on fire." Laughing, he kissed her. At the flagpole, he stopped, looked around. Lauren knew what, or who, he was looking for. She tensed up, slipped her arm around him, and settled in close. The rest of the kids drifted toward their cars. They heard the distant sounds of engines starting, doors slamming shut, horns honking.
"Hey, David!" someone called out. "Are you and Lauren coming to the beach?"
"We'll be there," David said, waving back. His eyes were narrowed. He kept glancing away from the lights, toward the field, the parking lot. Finally, he said, "Did you see them?" Before Lauren could answer, she heard his mother's voice.
"David, Lauren, there you are!"
Mrs. Haynes crossed the courtyard and came up to them. She hugged David fiercely and then smiled up at him. Lauren wondered if David saw the way that smile shook.
"I'm so proud of you!"
"Thanks, Mom." David looked behind her. "Is Dad here?"
"He had a business meeting tonight," she said slowly. "He's sorry."
David's face seemed to crumble.
"Whatever." "I'll take you guys out for pizza if you'd like."
"No, thanks. There's a party at Claiborne Beach, but..." "Thanks." David grabbed Lauren's hand and pulled her away. They walked slowly toward his car. Mrs. Haynes fell into step beside them. In silence, the three of them walked to the parking lot. David opened the door of his Porsche for Lauren. She paused for a moment, looked at his mother.
"Thanks for the invitation, Mrs. Haynes," she said.
"You're welcome," she answered quietly.
"Have fun."
Then she looked at David. "Be home by midnight." He walked around to his side of the car.
"Sure."
Later that night, as they were huddled around the fire, sitting amidst a circle of kids who were talking about the traditional grad night party, Lauren leaned against him, whispered,
"I'm sure he wanted to be there."
David sighed.
"Yeah."
"He'll be there next Friday," he said. But when he looked at her, his eyes were bright.
"I love you."
"I love you too," she said, slipping her hand into his.
Finally, he smiled. In the past few days, Angie had worked ceaselessly. Every morning she was up before dawn and seated at the kitchen table, with notes and designs and paperwork spread out before her. In these, the quiet, pale pink hours, she put together the coat campaign and created a series of advertisements and promotions. By 7:30, she was at the restaurant, meeting with Mama to learn the behind-the-scenes routine. First, they visited the suppliers. Angie watched her mother move through the boxes of fresh vegetables, choosing the same things day after day: tomatoes, green peppers, eggplant, iceberg lettuce, yellow onions, and carrots. Mama never paused to inspect the portobello or porcini mushrooms, the brightly colored array of peppers, the baby pea pods, butter lettuce, or rich dark truffles. It was the same routine at the fish and meat markets. Mama bought tiny shell pink shrimp for cocktails and nothing else. From the Alpac Brothers, she chose extra lean ground sirloin, ground pork and veal, and dozens of boneless chicken breasts. By the end of the fourth day, Angie had begun to see the missed opportunities. Finally, she hung back, told Mama to go on home, that she would be along soon. As soon as Mama left, Angie turned to the produce supervisor.
"Okay," she said.
Let's pretend that Desaria's is a brand new restaurant. For the next few hours, he tossed information at her like a circus performer. She caught every word and wrote it down, then did the same thing at the fish and vegetable markets. She must have asked 100 questions. What does it mean if the fish was flash frozen? What are the best kinds of clams? Oysters. Why would we want to buy squid ink? How do you pick a good cantaloupe? Why is Dungeness crab better than snow or king? The vendors answered each question patiently, and by the end of the week, Angie was beginning to understand how they could improve the menu. She collected recipes and menus compulsively from some of the most famous restaurants in Los Angeles, San Francisco, and New York. All of them, she noticed, used the freshest local ingredients for seasonal dishes. In addition, she read all of her father's notes and records and interrogated her sisters until they begged for mercy. For the first time in her life, she was becoming a part of the restaurant, instead of a satellite in its orbit. To Angie's and everyone else's surprise, she loved it. On Saturday night, in between helping Lauren waitress, she read over the accounts payable, paid bills, and jotted down some notes on what supplies were running low. The day passed in a blur of activity, and by the time the last guests left, she was exhausted. It felt great. She said goodnight to Mama and Mira, and then got two bowls of gelato and sat down at a table by the fireplace. She loved this time of night, in the quiet of the closed restaurant. It relaxed her, and sometimes, in the crackle of the fire or the tap of rain on the roof, she felt her father's presence. "I'm going home now, Angie," Lauren said, walking through the dining room. "Have some of this gelato with me. It's delicious." It had become a ritual in the past few nights, Angie and Lauren sharing dessert at the end of the evening. Angie actually looked forward to it. Lauren grinned. "At this rate, I'll have to waddle to the dance." Angie laughed. "Funny. Sit." Lauren sat down across from her, where Angie had already placed a bowl of the gelato and a spoon. She spooned out a bit of gelato, let it melt in her mouth. "Man, this is good. Too bad we hardly had any customers tonight." She looked at Lauren. "Your tips can't be too good." "They're not. The ad for the coat drive hits tomorrow. That should help."
"I hope so."
Angie heard the desperate edge in Lauren's voice. "How much does a homecoming dress cost these days?" Lauren sighed.
"Lots."
Angie studied her. "What size are you?"
"An 8.
"Same as me." The answer was there, plain as the spoon in her hand. "I could loan you a dress. Conlon, my ex-husband, was a reporter for the Seattle Times. Every now and then we went to some event, so I have a few dresses. One of them might fit you." The look on Lauren's face was easy to read, a combination of longing and shame.
"I couldn't do that, but thanks."
Angie decided not to push the offer. Lauren could think about it. "You're going with the boy who picks you up from work?" Lauren blushed. "David Haynes." Angie saw the transformation, knew what it meant. Love. It was no surprise. Lauren was a serious girl, the kind who fell in love hard and didn't come out of it easily. A good girl, in other words. "How long have you and David been dating?"
"Almost 4 years."
Angie lifted her eyebrows. High school years were like those of a dog's life. 4 years could be a lifetime. She wanted to say, "Be careful, Lauren. Love can kill you." But of course she didn't. If Lauren was lucky, it was a lesson she'd never learn. The thought made Angie sigh. Suddenly she was thinking about Conlon and all the years she'd loved him, and how it had felt when it was gone. She got up from the table quickly, before her sadness could be seen. She stood by the window, staring out at the night. The cold of autumn had come early this year. Already a layer of frost was forming on the street. All over town, leaves were falling from shivering trees, landing in piles on the sidewalk and along the roadsides. By this time next week, those heaps would be slippery and black. Soon there would be no leaves left.
Are you okay?
Angie heard the worry in Lauren's voice, and it embarrassed her. Fine. Before she could say more, apologize, or perhaps explain, a car pulled up outside the restaurant and honked.
That's David, Lauren said, popping to her feet.
Angie looked at the car out front. It was a classic Porsche Speedster, painted primer gray. The wheels shone with chrome, and the tires were obviously new.
That's some car.
Lauren came up beside her. I call him Speed Racer sometimes. You know, from the old cartoon. 'Cause he lives for that car.
Ah, a boy in his car.
Lauren laughed. If I have to see one more paint chip, I might scream. Of course, I don't tell him that. Angie stared down at the girl. Never had she seen such purity of emotion, such blatant adoration.
First love. All at once, she remembered how consuming it was. She almost said, "You be careful, Lauren."
But it wasn't her place. Such advice was for a mother to give.
See you Tuesday, Lauren said, leaving.
Angie watched Lauren go outside. The girl ran across the sidewalk and disappeared into the sports car. And suddenly, she was thinking of a long time ago, back when she'd been head over heels in love with Tommy Matucci. He'd driven an old, battered Ford Fairlane. Rickety and temperamental as that car had been, he'd loved it. Funny. She hadn't thought of that in years. They parked in front of Lauren's building, in their usual spot. She gently eased herself into position. It wasn't easy in a car this small. The gear shift seemed to take up a lot of space. Still, they'd had years to perfect their technique. David took her in his arms and kissed her. She felt herself falling into that familiar, breathy darkness, that kneading. Her heartbeat sped up. Within minutes, the windows were fogged up and their privacy was complete.
Lauren, he murmured,
and she heard it in his voice, too, that kneading of her. His hand slid beneath her blouse. She shivered at the touch. Then, his wristwatch started to bleat.
Shit,
he groaned, easing his hand from her body. It's 11:45. I can't believe they make me come home this early. I know eighth graders who can stay out till midnight. He crossed his arms with a dramatic flourish. It was all Lauren could do not to smile. He had no idea how childish he looked right now. The great David Ryerson Haynes, pouting. You're lucky, she said, snuggling up to him. It means they love you.
Yeah, right.
Lauren felt his heartbeat. It fluttered beneath her palm. For a second, just that, she felt older than him by years.
Your mom doesn't give a shit what time you get home, or even if you come home.
My point exactly, she said, feeling a swell of the old bitterness. She and Mom had tackled the issue of curfews a long time ago.
I won't be your warden, Mom had said. My parents tried that, and it only made me more wild.
Now Lauren could come and go as she pleased. David kissed her again, and then drew back with a sigh. She knew instantly that something was wrong. What's the matter? He leaned across her, opened the glove box.
Here, he said, handing her some papers.
What? She looked down. The Stanford application. My dad wants me to go for early decision. It's due November 15th.
Oh,
Lauren said, easing back into her own seat. She knew he'd do anything to please his father.
I thought you could do it, too.
The eagerness in his voice made her want to cry. How could he drive her home, see her apartment, and not get it?
I can't afford to do that, David. I need a scholarship, and not a few vanity bucks. I need a full ride.
His breath exhaled heavily.
I know.
They sat that way for a few long minutes, each in a separate seat, not touching, staring at the foggy windshield.
I probably won't get in, he said at last.
Come on, David. They have a building named after your family.
Then you will too.
He turned to her then, gathered her into his arms and held her, kissed her. She let herself be swept into that kiss until nothing else mattered but them. Later, when she was alone again, walking through the sad darkness of her apartment, she couldn't help wishing she lived in his world, where everything came easy. Dreams, most of all. When Mira returned from carpool, Angie was standing on her front porch.
You're up bright and early, Mira said, walking up the path. And you sort of looked like shit.
You should talk. Does everyone wear ripped sweatpants and rubber shoes for carpool?
Most of us. Come on in.
Smiling, she led Angie into the house, which smelled of coffee and pancakes. Picking up toys along the way, she went to the kitchen and poured 2 cups of coffee.
Okay,
she said, settling into a plaid, overstuffed chair in the cluttered family room.
Why are you here? And why do you look like a Survivor contestant?
Very funny. Angie plopped into a chair. I was up most of the night, working.
Working, huh?
Mira sipped her coffee and eyed Angie over the chipped rim. Angie handed her sister a notebook. Here's what I want to do. Mira set down her mug and opened the notebook. Surprise widened her eyes as she read. Angie launched into it. In addition to the coat promotion, I've planned for wine night on Tuesdays, where all bottles would be half off. Date night on Thursdays, where dinner would come with 2 movie tickets. And happy hour on Fridays and Saturdays. We could open the restaurant at 3 o'clock and serve drinks and free hors d'oeuvres until 5 o'clock. You know, antipasti, bruschetta, that kind of thing. My research indicates that a few happy hours a week could almost double our weekly gross. We're wasting our liquor license by using it for a drink here and there. And how's this? Rediscover romance at Desaria's. It's my ad tagline. I thought we could hand out roses to all the couples who come in.
Holy shit, Mira muttered.
Angie knew what that meant. Her sister had come to the big item, the menu change.
I want us to double the prices and cut half the items on the current menu. We need to do more fresh fish and seasonal vegetables.
Holy shit, Mira said again, looking up.
Papa would have loved this, Ange.
I know. It's Mama I'm worried about. Mira laughed. As we used to say, duh.
How do I pitch these ideas to her?
From a distance, preferably wearing body armor.
Funny.
Okay, Princess. There are 2 ways to get around Mama. The first and most obvious is to use Papa. Ultimately, she's always done anything to make him happy. Unfortunately, she's the one he's talking to.
Yeah, so you'll need Plan B.
Make her think it's her idea. I did that when I wanted to go see Wings at the Kingdome. It took almost a month, but she finally decided I wouldn't be American enough if I didn't go with my friends.
How do I do that?
It starts with asking for advice. Chapter 10. Lauren stood in the center of the dining room, staring down at the collection of salt and pepper shakers she'd gathered together. All night she'd been trying to figure out how to ask Angie for an advance on her first paycheck, or to borrow a dress. Either way, she'd look like a real loser. Not to mention that they might wonder what had happened to her tip money.
Drugs, Maria would say, shaking her head. So sad.
No doubt she'd blame it all on Lauren's red hair. If she told the truth, that she'd had to cough up back due rent, Maria and Angie would give each other that startled, oh, she's poor, how pathetic look. Lauren had seen that look 100 times in her life, from teachers and school counselors and neighbors. She went to the window, stared out at the foggy night. There were moments that mattered, that changed your life. Was a homecoming dance one of those memories that should be acquired at all costs? Would she be lessened somehow by a failure to attend? Perhaps she should go in a vintage dress and pretend it was a fashion statement, an airy disregard for convention instead of a response to her penniless life. They all knew she was on scholarship anyway. No one would say anything. But Lauren would know. All night she'd felt a little broken inside. Was the dance worth that? These were questions a girl should ask her mother. "Ha," Lauren said without a trace of humor. As usual, she had to follow her own counsel. There were two choices. She could tell David she was sick and not go to the dance, or she could ask Angie for help. Angie sat at the stainless steel counter. Notes and papers were spread out in front of her. Mama stood with her back to the sink, her arms crossed. It didn't take an expert to read her body language. Her eyes were narrowed, and her mouth was a needle-thin line of displeasure. Angie proceeded with the utmost caution. "I've spoken with Scott Foreman at the theater. He's ready to give us a 50% discount on tickets if we include him in our ads." Mama sniffed. "The movies are terrible these days. So much violence. It will upset people's stomach." "They'll be eating before the movie."
"Exactly."
Angie pressed forward. Business had really picked up since the inception of the coat drive. It was time to implement the rest of her plan. "Do you think it's a good idea?" Mama shrugged.
"We will see, I suppose."
"And the advertising, you think that's smart?"
"How much does it cost?"
Angie laid out the pricing sheets. Mama glanced at them, but didn't move from her place at the sink.
"Too much."
"I'll see if I can negotiate better pricing." She gently moved her notepad, revealing a menu from Cassiopeia's, the 4-star Italian restaurant in Vancouver. "Do you have any suggestions for wine night?" Mama sniffed.
"We could talk to Victoria and Casey McClellan. They own that winery in Walla Walla, Seven Hills. And Randy Finley, up at Mount Baker Vineyards, makes good wines. Maybe they could give us a good rate to feature their wines. Randy loves my Osobuco."
"That's a great idea, Mama." Angie made some more notes on her list. When she finished, she nudged the Cassiopeia menu. Mama craned her neck forward and tilted her head.
"What's that?"
"What?" Angie bit back a smile. "Now, about the fresh fish,
Angela Rose, why do you have that menu on your desk?"
Angie feigned surprise. "This? I was just interested in our competition." Mama waved her hand airily.
"They have never even been to the old country, those people."
"Their pricing is interesting." Mama looked at her.
"How so?"
"The entrees start at $14.95 and go up from there." Angie paused, shaking her head. "It's sad that so many people equate high prices with quality."
"Give me that."
Mama snatched the menu from the table and whipped it open.
"Herbed pancakes with wild mushroom butter and pan-fried whitefish for $21.95? This is not Italian. My mama, God rest her soul, made a tonno al cartoccio, tuna baked in parchment, that melted in your mouth."
"Terry has tuna on sale this week, Mama.
Ahi, too. And his calamari steaks were beautiful." "You are remembering your papa's favorite, calamari ripleni. It takes the very best tomatoes.
Johnny from the farmer's market promises me red heaven."
"Calamari and ahi are expensive."
"We could try it for a night or two.
An advertised special.
If it doesn't work, we can forget about it." There was a knock at the door. Angie swore under her breath. Mama was close to agreeing. Any little change could send them back to square one. Lauren walked into the kitchen, clutching her neatly folded apron.
"Good night, Lauren," Angie said. "Lock up on your way out."
Lauren didn't move. She looked confused somehow, uncertain.
Thank you, Lauren, Mama said. Have a nice evening.
Lauren didn't move.
What is it?
Angie asked.
Lauren frowned. I can work tomorrow night, after all.
Great, Angie said, going back to her notes. See you at 5 o'clock.
The minute Lauren left, Angie returned to the discussion.
So, Mama, what do you think about upping the prices a little and adding a daily fish special?
I think my daughter is trying to change the menu that has been good enough for Desarius for years.
Small changes, Mama. The kind that take us forward in time.
She paused, loading the big gun.
Papa would have approved.
He loved my calamari ripleni, it's true.
Mama pushed away from the sink and sat down beside Angie.
I remember when your papa bought me the Cadillac. He was so proud of that car.
But you wouldn't drive it.
Mama smiled. Your papa thought I was crazy, ignoring that beautiful car. So one day he sold my Buick and left the new car keys on the table, along with a note that read, Meet me for lunch. I'll bring the wine.
She smiled.
He knew I had to be pushed into change.
I don't want to push too hard.
Yes, you do, Mama sighed. Your whole life has been about pushing, Angela, getting what you want.
She touched Angie's cheek.
Your papa loved that about you, and he'd be so proud of you right now.
Suddenly, Angie wasn't thinking about the menu at all. She was thinking about her father and all the things that she missed about him. The way he hefted her on his shoulder to watch the Thanksgiving Day parade. The way he said prayers with her at night and told silly, meaningless jokes at the breakfast table.
So, Mama said, her eyes misty too. We will try a few specials this week, and then we will see.
It'll work, Mama. You'll see. Business will really pick up when the ads start. We're the back page of the entertainment section on Sunday.
Already more people are coming. I must admit that. It's a good thing you hired that girl. She's been a good waitress, Mama said. When you hired her, a redhead, I was sure we were in for trouble. And when you told me about the poor thing needing a dress, I thought, oh, no!
Angie shot to her feet.
The dance!
What's the matter?
Tomorrow night is homecoming. That's why Lauren was hanging around in the kitchen. She wanted to remind me that she needed tomorrow night off.
Then why did she say she'd work?
I don't know.
Angie fished her car keys out of her pocket and grabbed her coat off the hook by the door.
Bye, Mama. See you tomorrow.
Angie hurried from the restaurant. Outside, a light rain was falling. She looked up and down the street.
No Lauren.
She ran to the parking lot and got in her car, heading north on Driftwood. There wasn't another car on the road. She was about to turn onto the highway when she noticed the bus stop. Light from a nearby street lamp spilled down, giving everything a soft amber glow. Even from this distance, she could see Lauren's copper-red hair. She pulled up in front of her. Lauren looked up slowly. Her eyes were red and swollen.
Oh,
she said, snapping upright when she saw Angie. Angie hit the window button. The glass slid downward. Cold air immediately whooshed into the car. She leaned toward the passenger side.
Get in!
Lauren pointed behind her.
My bus is here, but thanks.
Tomorrow is the dance, right? Angie said. That's what you were trying to tell me in the kitchen.
Don't worry about it. I'm not going.
Why not? Lauren looked away.
I don't feel like it.
Angie glanced down at the girl's old, too-worn shoes. I offered to loan you a dress, remember? Lauren nodded. A pathetically hope-filled look filled her eyes.
Yes.
Do you need one?
Yes.
The answer was barely audible. Okay, you be at the restaurant at 3 o'clock. Have you made arrangements to get dressed at a friend's house? Lauren shook her head. Would you like to get ready at my house? It might be fun.
Really? I'd love that.
Okay, call David and tell him to pick you up at my house. 7998 Miracle Mile Road. It's the first driveway after the bridge. The bus pulled up behind them and honked. It wasn't until much later, when Angie walked into her dark, empty house, that she wondered whether she'd made a mistake. Getting a girl ready for a dance was a mother's job. The next morning, Angie hit the ground running. At 7 o'clock, she and Mama met with suppliers and delivery men. By 10, they'd ordered most of the week's food, checked the vegetables and fruits for freshness, made out the payroll checks, deposited money in the restaurant's account, and dropped the tablecloths off at the laundry. When Mama went off to do her own errands, Angie headed for the printers, where she had flyers and coupons made for wine and date night. Then she dropped off the first batch of donated coats to Help Your Neighbor. It started raining when she was at the dry cleaners. By noon, it was a full-on rainstorm. The streets were a cauldron of boiling water. There was nothing new in that. The weather this time of year was predictable. From now until early May, it would be gray skies and raindrops. Sunlight in the coming months would be a rare and unexpected gift that couldn't be counted on and wouldn't last. Those who couldn't stand the continual shadow world of misty gray would find themselves waking in the middle of the night, restless, unable to sleep through the sound of rain on the roofs. She pulled up to the restaurant, 15 minutes late. Lauren stood on the sidewalk, beneath the restaurant's green and white awning. There was an old blue backpack on the sidewalk at her feet. Angie rolled down the window. "Sorry I'm late." "I thought you'd forgotten." Angie wondered if anyone kept the promises made to this girl, or if, in fact, any promises were ever made. "Get in," she said, opening the passenger door.
"Are you sure?"
Angie smiled. "Believe me, Lauren, I'm always sure. Livy is covering my shift. Now get in." Lauren did as she was told, shutting the door hard. Rain hammered the car, made it shake and rattle. They drove in silence. Rain marched across the windshield. The metronomic thwop, thwop, thwop of the wipers was so loud it didn't make sense to talk. When they reached the cottage, Angie parked close to the front door. Angie turned to Lauren. "Do you think we should call your mom? Maybe she'd like to join us." Lauren laughed. It was a bitter, humorless sound. "I don't think so." She seemed to realize how harsh she'd sounded. She smiled and shrugged. "She's not one for dances." Angie didn't go down the road of those words. She was this girl's boss, that was all. She was loaning a dress to Lauren. Just that. "Okay, let's go inside and see what I have." Lauren launched herself sideways, threw her arms around Angie. Her smile was so big it swallowed her face, made her look about 11 years old. "Thank you, Angie. Oh, thank you." Lauren hadn't grown up on make-believe. Unlike most of her friends, she'd spent her childhood hours watching television shows that featured shootouts and hookers and women in jeopardy. Real life, as her mother so often pointed out. There had been no cartoons in the Ribideau apartment, no Disney specials. By the tender age of 7, Lauren knew that Prince Charming was a crock. When she lay in her narrow twin bed in her apartment that smelled vaguely of cigarettes and beer, she didn't dream of being Cinderella or Snow White. She'd never seen the point in the sweep-you-off-your-feet, white-dressed princess fantasy. Until tonight. Angie Malone had opened a door for Lauren on this night, and the view from its porch was staggering. It was a world that seemed bathed in sunlight and possibility. First had come the dress. No, first had come the house. "My papa built this place," Angie had said. "When I was a kid, we spent summers out here." The house was tucked in between towering trees. The music of the distant surf filled the air. The wraparound porch outlined the shingled two-story cottage. Wicker rocking chairs were positioned carefully here and there. One could imagine sitting there, sipping hot cocoa on a day like today, watching the silver-tipped ocean below. When Lauren saw the cottage, she stopped. This was the kind of home she'd always dreamed of. "Lauren?" Angie had said, looking back at her. Just looking at this home sparked a well of wanting.
"Sorry," Lauren said, lurching forward. Inside, the house was every bit as perfect as the exterior had implied. Big, overstuffed denim sofas faced one another in front of a river rock fireplace. The kitchen was small and cheery, with butter-yellow cabinets and a picture window that looked past the porch to a rose garden. Huge fir trees ringed the property, made it feel worlds away from any neighbor.
"It's beautiful," Lauren whispered.
"Thanks. We like it." "So," Angie said, bending down to light a fire, "what look do you want to go for?"
"Huh?"
Angie turned to face her. "Sexy? Innocent? Princess? What do you want to be tonight?"
"Any dress is okay."
"You need serious help in the girlfriend department. Perhaps even send an aid car help. Come on." She walked past Lauren and headed up the narrow staircase. The steps creaked along the way. Lauren rushed up behind her. They followed a narrow hallway into an airy, lived-in-looking bedroom with a high-peaked white ceiling and whitewashed wood floors. A big four-postered bed dominated the room. On either side, banged-up tables held reading lamps and piles of paperbacks. Angie went to the walk-in closet and pulled the light cord. A single bulb hung overhead, casting a swinging beam of light onto rows of clothing.
"Let's see here. I only brought a few of my gowns. I was actually going to try selling them on eBay."
She moved down to one end of the closet, where several yellow-beige Nordstrom garment bags hung smashed together.
Nordstrom.
Lauren had never owned anything from that venerable Seattle landmark. Heck, she couldn't afford a cup of coffee at the kiosk outside the store. She took a step back. Angie unzipped a bag and pulled out a long black dress, then turned to her. "What do you think?" The dress was halter style, with rhinestones at the throat and a double band of bigger stones at the waistline. The fabric was slippery. Silk, probably.
"What do I think?"
Lauren couldn't borrow something like that. What if she spilled on it?
"You're right. Too mature. This is a fun night."
Angie dropped the dress on the floor and went back to garment bags, burrowing through them in a frenzy. Lauren bent down and picked up the fallen gown. The material caressed her fingers. She'd never touched fabric so soft.
"Aha!"
Angie withdrew another gown, pink this time, the dainty color of a scallop shell. The fabric was heavier, some kind of knit that could expand or contract to fit a woman's or a girl's body. It was a simple sleeveless tank front with a deeply plunging back. It has a built-in bra. Not that 17-year-old breasts need a bra. Angie pulled out another dress. This one was emerald green, with long sleeves and an off-the-shoulder neckline. It was gorgeous, but Lauren's gaze returned to the pink knit.
"How much did that one cost?" she dared to ask.
Angie glanced at the pink dress and smiled.
"This whole thing? I got it at the rack. No, it was at that second-hand store on Capitol Hill."
Lauren couldn't help smiling.
"Yeah, right.
So it's the pink, yes?"
"I might damage it. I couldn't..."
"The pink." Angie hung the black and green dresses back up, then slung the pink one over her arm.
"Shower time."
Lauren followed dutifully behind Angie as she tossed the gown on the bed, then headed for the master bathroom.
"Do you have shoes?"
Lauren nodded. "What color?"
"Black."
"We can make that work," Angie said as she turned the shower on. "I could knit a sweater in the amount of time it takes to heat the water around here." Then started grabbing bottles and jars from the cabinet. "This is an exfoliant. You know what that is, don't you?" At Lauren's nod, Angie reached for something else. "This is a hydrating mask. It helps my skin, makes me look 10 years younger."
That would make me a kindergartner. Angie laughed and shoved the products into Lauren's arms. Take a shower, then we'll do your hair and makeup.